Let's open our Bibles to Jeremiah chapter 43 and quickly recap what we were talking about last time we were together. After the assassination of Gedaliah, the Jewish governor of the Babylonian province of Judea, the assassin took hostage all the Judean remnant that he could get his hands on and was going to take them off to Ammon. But the man who had warned that this was going to happen immediately came and chased them down and recovered the captives, but didn't manage to kill off the assassin before he escaped. But they didn't just stay in the land. They decided they needed to go to Egypt. And they asked Jeremiah if he would go to the Lord and find out what God wanted them to do. And that whatever he came back with, they were good with that. They would do it. But that is not what happened. When he came back after 10 days, Jeremiah told them, God doesn't want you going to Egypt. He wants you staying in the land and submitting to the Babylonians. The Judeans, who had swore up and down that they would follow God's words from Jeremiah, are now accusing him of being a false prophet. So Jeremiah chapter 43, verse 1. When Jeremiah finished speaking to all the people, all these words of He who is their God, with which He who is their God had sent him to them, Azariah the son of Hoshaiah, and Johanan the son of Kareah, and all the insolent men said to Jeremiah, you are telling a lie. He who is our God didn't send you to say, don't go to Egypt to live there. Baruch the son of Neriah has sent you against us to deliver us into the hand of the Chaldeans, that they may kill us or take us into exile to Babylon. So they accuse Jeremiah of just being the mouthpiece of a Babylonian puppet, Baruch, which is a big twist that we talked about last time, because Baruch actually was Jeremiah's servant that was interacting with the Jewish officials whenever the country fell to the Babylonians. Verse number 4. So Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the commanders of the forces and all the people did not obey the voice of He who is to remain in the land of Judah. So even though they've been warned that to disobey God will result in their deaths, going to Egypt will result in them dying either from the sword, famine, or pestilence, they do it anyway. They blow off God's messenger. Verse 5, but Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the commanders of the forces took all the remnant of Judah who had returned to live in the land of Judah from all the nations to which they had been driven, the men, the women, the children, the princesses, and every person whom Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had left with Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and also Jeremiah the prophet, and Baruch, the son of Neriah. Now, this is the first time we learned that Baruch is in this group here. Now, he was mentioned just a moment ago, but that didn't necessarily mean that he was in the group. He could have been back in Mitzpah, that Jeremiah was just speaking whatever it was that Baruch had recently talked to him about. But now we find out they're right there together. Now, they came into the land of Egypt, for they did not obey the voice of He who is, and they arrived at Tahpenes. Now, Tahpenes is one of the first big cities in the Nile Delta as you're coming down the road by the Mediterranean Sea from Israel to Egypt. And it is ironically very close to Goshen, the land of Goshen, out of which the Israelites were taken by the hand of God a long time previous to this. 1,000 years earlier. But now they're coming back to Egypt to their detriment. Verse number 8. Then the word of He Who Is came to Jeremiah in Tapenes. Take in your hands large stones. Hide them in the mortar in the pavement that is at the entrance to Pharaoh's palace at Tapenes in the sight of the men of Judah. So now we go through another little pantomime here. He is supposed to take fairly decent-sized stones. Remember, he's in his 60s, and whatever large stones for him is not going to be monstrous. And so he's to take those stones and kind of dig out some of the mortar that's in the pavement out in front of the royal palace. There were plenty of royal cities all over the Delta region, so that wherever the king came, he would have a nice palace to stay in while he was there. So this is one of those. So Jeremiah is supposed to dig up a little area in that pavement and put some marker stones. And then he's told this. He's supposed to say to the leaders that are watching him do this, "Thus says He Who Is of the hosts, of the armies, the God of Israel. Behold, I will send and take Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and I will set his throne above these stones that I have hidden, and he will spread his royal canopy over them." So there is a specific prophecy made by Jeremiah in the presence of these leaders. You know that guy that you guys think you're so afraid of that you had to run away from Judea? He is going to be in this exact spot in the near future. His portable throne will be put right over my little hidden marker stones. He'll have his little royal canopy up above his head right here at this spot. And so these guys will remember that later, shortly before they die. A little bit more of the message. It says, "He shall come and strike the land of Egypt, giving over to the pestilence those who are doomed to the pestilence, to captivity those who are doomed to captivity, and to the sword those who are doomed to the sword." Now, we do know that Nebuchadnezzar wanted to take over all of Egypt, but the history seems to indicate that he only carried on military activities in the northern part of the land of Egypt, up in the Delta region, which is where Tapenes is located. But when he carried out these military operations, the three things that kill people during wartime happened. There was the direct death by the military forces, the sword. There were deaths because of famine, and there were deaths because of pestilence. And so that's what's being predicted. The thing that they thought they were running away from, they've actually run right straight into again. Verse 12, "I shall kindle a fire in the temples of the gods of Egypt, and he shall burn them and carry them away captive." So at least some of the temples up here in the Delta region are going to be burned by King Nebuchadnezzar, and the idols that represent the gods of those temples will be taken hostage and carried away to Babylon. "And he shall clean the land of Egypt as a shepherd cleans his cloak of vermin." So as a shepherd is, you know, picking up bugs, working around the sheep and all of that, at the end of certain periods of the day or periods of the week, he delouses himself or he debugs himself. Well, that's how Nebuchadnezzar is going to treat Egypt. "He shall burn them. He shall go away from there in peace after he's done all of this. And he shall break the obelisks of Heliopolis, which are in the land of Egypt, and the temples of the gods of Egypt he shall burn with fire." Now, you know what an obelisk is? It's a very tall pillar. Usually it's got a pyramidal top on the peak of it. Sometimes writing on the sides to tell history stories, or maybe to tell things about the accomplishment of kings or gods and goddesses. So some of those are going to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. And as we've already heard, he's going to destroy a lot of the temples. Now, the obelisks are going to be located in Heliopolis, which is a little bit south and west of Toponies. About a day and a half journey. Let me check the distance here real quick. It's down by Cairo. And it's about 70-some miles as the crow flies southwest of Toponies. So that's at least how far Nebuchadnezzar is going to go, all the way down to that area, and make his destruction. And these Judeans are going to see bits and pieces of that before they get caught up in the sword, famine, and pestilence, and die as they were warned would happen. Now we go to chapter 44. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the Judeans who lived in the land of Egypt, at Migdol, that means the tower, at Toponies, which we already talked about the city, at Memphis, which is just a little bit south of where I just told you Heliopolis is located, and in the land of Pathros. Now, Pathros is southern Egypt, so south of the delta. And so some of the Judeans will think they can escape by going farther south into the land. Thus says he who is of hosts, the God of Israel, you have seen all the disaster that I have brought upon Jerusalem and upon all the cities of Judah. So you've been eyewitnesses of my judgment for sin. Behold, this day they are a desolation, and no one dwells in them, because of the evil that they committed, provoking me to anger, in that they went to make offerings and serve other gods that they knew not, neither they, nor you, nor your fathers. So the reason they're in trouble is their idolatry. Verse 4, yet I persistently sent to you all my servants, the prophets, saying, oh, do not do this abomination that I hate. So God repeatedly sent prophet after prophet after prophet, warning them not to engage in idolatry. Verse 5, but they did not listen or incline their ear to turn from their evil and make no offerings to other gods. Therefore my wrath and my anger were poured out and kindled in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, and they became a waste and a desolation as at this day. So this is history, but it's close history for these people that are hearing this message. It just happened in the last few months. And now, thus says he who is the God of the hosts, the God of Israel, why do you commit this great evil against yourselves to cut off from you man and woman, infant and child from the midst of Judah, leaving you no remnant? So what are you doing now, engaging in more idolatry? Verse 8, why do you provoke me to anger with the work of your hands, making offerings to other gods in the land of Egypt where you have come to live, so that you may be cut off and become a curse and a taunt among all the nations of the earth? So God is expressing his frustration that even now in Egypt, having seen all of the judgment for idolatry that happened in Judea, these Judean remnant peoples are engaging in the worship of Egypt's idols. Verse number 9. Have you forgotten the evil of your fathers, the evil of the kings of Judah, the evil of their wives, and your own evil? And the evil of your wives, which they committed in the land of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? They have not humbled themselves even to this day, nor have they feared, nor walked in my law and my statutes that I set before you and before your fathers. So it's on the record now that even in the face of judgment, They're not learning. They're not repenting. Therefore, thus says he who is of the hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will set my face against you for harm to cut off all Judah. I will take the remnant of Judah who have set their faces to come to the land of Egypt to live, and they shall be consumed, all be consumed. In the land of Egypt they shall fall by the sword, by famine they shall be consumed. From the least to the greatest, they shall die by the sword and by famine, and they shall become an oath, a horror, a curse, and a taunt. I will punish those who dwell in the land of Egypt as I have punished Jerusalem, with the sword, with famine, and pestilence, so that none of the remnant of Judah who have come to live in the land of Egypt shall escape or survive or return to the land of Judah to which they desire to return to dwell there, for they shall not return except some fugitives. So God lays it out clearly here. Of all those who voluntarily went to Egypt, none of those guys are going to survive. They are going to die, apparently, in the turmoil that comes with the Babylonian army under Nebuchadnezzar arriving in the Delta. That's when a lot of these Judeans are going to die. A few who presumably did not come voluntarily will get back to Judah. But they are the only ones who will get to do so. Verse 15. Then some of the men who knew that their wives had made offerings to other gods, so husbands that are quite aware that their wives are idolaters, and all the women who stood by, a great assembly, all the people who lived in Pathros in the land of Egypt, answered Jeremiah, "As for the word that you've spoken to us in the name of he who is, we will not listen to you." So again, they are quite rebellious against the prophet of God over the last 40 years. Verse 17, "But we will do everything that we've vowed, make offerings to the Queen of Heaven." The Queen of Heaven is another name for Asherah. Here in Egypt, she's called Isis, Ishtar, the Greeks. And the Romans know her as Venus or Aphrodite. All of this idea that the Queen of Heaven, the goddess figure of the universe, needs to be worshipped. That's what these guys are insisting. They have to keep it up. So we're going to keep doing that. We're going to pour out drink offerings to her as we did, both we and our fathers, our kings and our officials in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. So they're doubling down. They're saying, Jeremiah, we don't believe a word you said about the judgment of God on Judah being because of idolatry. All that stuff that just happened that we escaped from, that's not because of all the worship of the Queen of Heaven. We're going to get back to the Queen of Heaven again. For then we had plenty of food and prospered and saw no disaster. So they're actually saying the problem is when we quit offering those things to the Queen of Heaven, that's when trouble started. Since we left off making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out drink offerings to her, we've lacked everything and have been consumed by the sword and by famine. The women said, "When we made offerings to the Queen of Heaven and poured out drink offerings to her, was it without our husband's approval that we made cakes for her, bearing her image, and poured out drink offerings for her?" So they're all making this united front against Jeremiah. "We did this with our husband's knowledge. And you know what? The trouble for us started after we couldn't do this anymore." Verse 20. "Then Jeremiah said to all the people, men and women, and all the people who had given him this answer, 'As for the offerings that you offered in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, you and your fathers, your kings and your officials and the people of the land, did not he who is remember them? Did it not come into his mind? He who is could no longer bear your evil deeds and the abominations that you committed. Therefore, your land has become a desolation and a waste and a curse without inhabitant as it is this day. It's because you made offerings and because you sinned against he who is and did not obey the voice of he who is or walk in his law and in his statutes and in his testimonies that this disaster has happened to you as it is this day. So Jeremiah goes, no, it's not because you quit making offerings to the Queen of Heaven. It's because you were making these offerings to the Queen of Heaven that God sent his judgment. Jeremiah said to all the people and all the women, hear the word of he who is, all of you of Judah who are in the land of Egypt. Thus says he who is of the hosts, the God of Israel. You and your wives have declared with your mouths, so you've confessed, and have fulfilled it with your hands, saying, we will surely perform our vows that we've made to make offerings to the Queen of Heaven and to pour out drink offerings to her. Then confirm your vows and perform your vows. So fine, just do it then. Therefore, hear the word of he who is, all of you of Judah who dwell in the land of Egypt. Behold, I have sworn by my great name, says he who is, that my name shall no more be invoked by the mouth of any man of Judah in all the land of Egypt, saying, as he who is God lives. So all you Judeans in Egypt, God is not going to listen ever again when you use his name. Behold, I am watching over them for disaster and not for good. And all the men of Judah who are in the land of Egypt shall be consumed by the sword, famine, until there is an end of them. And those who escape the sword shall return from the land of Egypt to the land of Judah, few in number. And all the remnant of Judah who came to the land of Egypt to live shall know whose word will stand, mine or theirs. So when everything is finished in a short period of time, it'll be pretty obvious who is correct. And Jeremiah will be in that camp, because God's judgment is going to terminate this rebellious generation, with the exception of a few people, presumably those that really didn't want to go in the first place, who will get to return to Egypt, or to Judah from Egypt. Verse 29, this shall be the sign to you, declares he who is, that I will punish you in this place in order that you may know that my words will surely stand against you for harm. Thus says he who is, behold, I will give Pharaoh Hophra, king of Egypt, into the hand of his enemies and into the hand of all who seek his life, as I gave Zedekiah, king of Judah, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, who was his enemy and sought his life. So Zedekiah came to his end because God handed him over to the Babylonians, and he was blinded after watching all of his heirs killed right in front of his eyes. And then he was taken off to die in prison exile in Babylon. Well, Pharaoh Hophra, or Apres, is going to have a similar end. And it's very twisted. When you kind of check out the Egyptian history of this time period, you will discover that after Apres tried to take on Babylon and kind of disrupted Nebuchadnezzar's siege of Jerusalem, he was sent packing by the Babylonians back to Egypt. And then there was a lot of inter-fighting politically in Egypt, trying to decide who was it that was going to be in charge. And eventually, Apres, or Hophra, gets kicked out. He gets thrown off the throne in favor of someone else. And believe it or not, Apres will go to Babylon and beg for their assistance in getting himself back in power in Egypt. And Nebuchadnezzar will agree to that. He will assist him. But of course, from that point forward, he would have to be a Babylonian puppet king of Egypt. But eventually, Apres disappears from the record. Presumably, he is killed in his attempt to retake the throne for himself, and he comes to a bad end. So exactly as is being predicted here, Hophra, which these Judeans are thinking of as the guy that's protecting them from the Babylonians, he will himself fall, first under the Babylonians and then under his own Egyptian people. At this point, we're going to leave Jeremiah in Egypt and go to the book of Ezekiel. Remember, Ezekiel is the other big prophet who is prophesying during this time, and he is up in exile in Babylon. He lives in a town just a day's journey to the southeast of the capital city. Ezekiel chapter 33, which we'll just barely get started on, is a reminder that Ezekiel is supposed to be speaking for God to the people. Ezekiel 33, "The word of he who is came to me, Son of man, speak to your people and say to them, if I bring the sword upon the land, and the people of that land take a man from among them and make them his watchman, or their watchman, if he sees the sword coming upon the land, and blows the trumpet and warns the people, then if anyone who hears the sound of the trumpet does not take warning, and the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet and did not take warning, his blood shall be upon his head. If he had taken warning, he could have saved his life." So the point of a watchman is to give the people fair warning that danger is on the way. He can't go down there and make them believe that. He can't make them obey that warning. All he can do is give them the warning, and then they are responsible for acting accordingly. And that's the responsibility of a preacher, of a prophet, of a minister of Christ. But, as we'll see tomorrow, if that responsible person for the message doesn't bother with the message, he is accountable for the people that are lost.